You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Let's talk about the business of Boston. Today, telehealth. It got a lot easier during the pandemic. Better insurance reimbursements, more widely accepted. The question is, will that stick? Which seems to be a recurring question for a range of COVID-19 policies here in the Commonwealth. Think cocktails to go for restaurants, or at the federal level, student loan forgiveness, which has been extended a few times. As we make our way out of the pandemic stage of COVID-19, which policy changes that made life and business easier will stay? And that includes telehealth. So joining us now, Dr. Christopher Garofalo, a family medicine physician who practices in Attleboro and co-owns Family Medicine Associates of South Attleboro. He's also a member of the Massachusetts Medical Society. Dr. Garofalo, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's size this up a little, Dr. Garofalo. So there's this consortium, Massachusetts Federally Qualified Health Center Telehealth Consortium, kind of a mouthful. It's about 35 community health centers. From March 2020 to August 2021, they say they conducted more than a million telehealth visits. Does a number of that size surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me at all. In my own practice, we were actually able to scale up to telehealth fairly quickly within about a week or so. So it's not surprising that other practices around the Commonwealth were able to do that as well.
When you say you were able to scale up, give me some sense of that. So number of patients you would have been seeing in your office on, you know, however you measure it, a given day, a given week, versus a couple of weeks into telehealth, you're seeing that number on a screen instead?
So we probably went from, with each physician in the office, seeing maybe 70, 80 patients in a week. That number very quickly dropped down when the restrictions came into place. So within about a week or two, we had many of our patients being seen by telehealth. I would say probably, you know, maybe 20 per week at that point.
So about 20 out of 80. And did that hold? I mean, so what? That's a quarter of your patients in a week per doctor. Did that hold? Is that still what you're doing now?
So I would say we're doing between 10 and 15% of our visits by telehealth now. It has dropped as the restrictions have been eased. However, we did find with telehealth that there are certain patients in certain medical issues that lend themselves very well to being done by telehealth, not necessarily as a substitute for in-person visits, but sort of to go along with those visits.
So let's dive into that a little bit. First, you know, the kind of appointment that really works well on telehealth versus the kind of appointment where you just have to be in person.
So I think the easiest example is issues dealing with mental or brain health, as we like to call it now. Patients who are depressed, who have depression or anxiety, ADHD, that lends itself very well because there is not as significant of a physical exam component to that. So being able to manage that is relatively easy. Certainly patients who have things like back pain, abdominal pain, anything like that, where you really do have to sort of lay your hands on the patient and do an exam, it's still really important to have those patients come into the office.
And do you remember any particular patient, understanding confidentiality issues, but maybe there's a story you can tell us, especially from the early days where you thought, I am so glad we have this option to see this person virtually. It makes a difference in their lives.
Yes. I have a patient who lives in the Taunton area, which isn't too far, but he has lots of difficulties with mobility because of chronic pain. He's had some socioeconomic challenges. He no longer owns a car. He does live with his girlfriend, but she has lots of medical issues. So it's not easy for him to drive or to get from Taunton to Attleboro. And because of the medications that he's on, he really needs to be checking in with me every 3 months or so. So when telehealth came along, he was really sort of one of the perfect people to do this. So we were able to manage his medications much easier. And because I could actually see him on a more frequent basis, it allowed us to take care of some other issues that maybe we didn't get a chance to talk about because it was hard for him to get into the office.
So being able to use telehealth not only allowed you to continue treating him when there was this disruption, but actually enough more frequently to address other medical needs. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yes, that's correct. And I would say that's true for many of our patients, elderly patients who may have mobility or transportation issues, patients with disabilities, again, who may have difficulty accessing physician offices. You know, they don't necessarily come in as frequently. And now that we could see them a little more often through their video screen, while not perfect, it does open up a window into being able to hit on some of those other issues that we would not have done before.
We're talking with Dr. Christopher Garofalo, who practices family medicine in Attleboro. The subject is telehealth. Dr. Garofalo, stay with us. I'm going to add a second voice here. We're also joined now by Jessica Bartlett, who's a medical reporter for the Boston Globe and has been covering telehealth throughout the pandemic. Jessica, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So now I know you've actually spoken with Dr. Garofalo in the past for a story that you did on insurance reimbursements. Let me just give you a chance to react to what you've heard so far right here at the top.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of providers shifted to telehealth as the entire in-person care shut down and found it to be really productive in replacing even a portion of their visits that they were used to seeing. But questions really remain about how much of that telehealth will kind of continue into the future, how the reimbursement structure will work, whether it works for all of their patients or not. So there's a lot of uncertainty, even with all the strides we made early on, about how that kind of continues.
So why the uncertainty, Jessica? If it's working, if it's been put in place, were these measures temporary in the first place and so they have to be renewed? Or is there a conversation about reversing these measures? Why would we be in a moment where there's a question mark now?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the reimbursement criteria. So at the height of the pandemic, the federal government and the state government both reacted and kind of removed all the hurdles that existed to telehealth. They established reimbursement at parity to the in-person rate. And that allowed wide-scale adoption because providers weren't concerned about which services they'd be reimbursed for, how much. They knew pretty much we're going to get reimbursed what we used to get reimbursed. We're just going to deliver it in a different way. But a lot of those reimbursement structures were temporary under the emergency condition. Governor Baker signed a law in January 2021 that established a new ground floor for a lot of these reimbursements. He said that behavioral health will be reimbursed at the in-person rate permanently. But for behavioral or for primary care and chronic care, those parity reimbursements would only last 2 years, and that expires this year, end of this year in December. And everything else was going to revert to how insurers and providers wanted to negotiate them. And so that's kind of thrown into this other question, well, how exactly are we going to deploy that state law? What services are being left out? And so there exists still a level of uncertainty about where things stand.
So, Dr. Garofalo, how do you feel about this move here in the Commonwealth to keep behavioral health, you called it brain health as a rough equivalent a few minutes ago, reimbursed at the same level for telehealth visits as in-person visits, but lots of other kinds of health care goes back to the way it was before the pandemic, where doctors didn't get paid the same amount to treat patients over a screen or a phone as they did in person?
Yeah, I think the move to have the behavioral health paid at parity is the right choice for our patients and physicians. And I think that's the way that we should go for much, if not all, of the care that we've already had. As Jessica said, only primary care and chronic care will be the only other entities that will be covered. But there are some questions around what exactly encompasses primary care as well as what encompasses chronic care. So I think, you know, from a physician's standpoint, we would really like to see just about all care covered. And, you know, I think we've already seen and talked about the benefits to patients. Physicians get to be reimbursed and keep their doors open. And I think employers should be in favor of this. You know, if you're an employer, would you rather have your patient doing a telehealth visit with a physician for 15 or 20 minutes in the middle of the afternoon, or would you rather have them miss the whole afternoon and not be productive? And I think insurers should be in favor of it as well. I think, you know, being able to have patients access their own physician will cut down on visits to urgent cares and emergency rooms and get them the care they need so it can all be done less expensively.
So the truth is, I'm not sure which of you is the better person to ask, answer my next question. So I'll ask it and then maybe you guys can tell me, given what you just said, Dr. Garofalo, or what he just said, Jessica, insurance companies, why was it so hard to get them to cover telehealth at an equal rate, you know, before the pandemic? And if, in fact, it has all these positive benefits, why would an insurance company have an interest in not keep that going forward? Who's the best person to answer that?
I think I'll take a crack at this one first. I think insurers want to, they would tell you that they want to kind of negotiate. They want to find a middle ground here. But the entire healthcare ecosystem has been laser focused on reducing healthcare spending. And insurers, for their part, for over a decade, have looked at telehealth as the primary means to accomplish that. They think, well, it's less cost to deliver. You can do it out of your home. You don't need a physical space to do it. There's no reason we should be reimbursing you for an in-person rate for something you're doing from afar. They acquiesced to the behavioral health parity because delivering behavioral health over the phone or over video chat looks very similar to how you deliver it in person. But they say for a number of other services that there's really no reason that we should be continuing to keep the spending high when we could potentially lower it.
So and, basically, if it doesn't cost you the same to do it, why should we pay you the same to do it?
Right. I think, and Dr. Garofalo can speak to this, though, that providers are not necessarily abandoning their offices right now. They have not reduced their overall costs. They still have a physical building they're going to. And in fact, they've added some of the technology costs on top of this to deliver it. So while down the road, it might cost less to deliver telehealth, providers right now are saying, you know, we're not seeing that. So we still need to be reimbursed at the full rate.
So Dr. Garofalo, jump in here.
Yeah, I think Jessica said it really well. You know, I actually have two offices, one in Attleboro, one in North Attleboro. We still have those offices. You know, if we do 10 to 15% of our visits via telehealth, that means that we're still doing 85 to 90% in person. And even for those telehealth visits, I still need to have a receptionist to answer the phone and schedule that patient. I need a medical assistant in order to help schedule any testing that comes out of the visit. For example, if they need an x-ray, I still need a biller in my office to bill the insurance company. And I still need someone who does insurance referrals because referrals get generated from those visits. So while on the one hand, it may seem like it would be less expensive, and I do agree, if you are a physician who is doing something just via telehealth, yes, that might be an argument, but I would argue, and I agree with Jessica, that most physicians are not in that situation.
And Jessica, for you, with that still ringing in your ears, predictions, where do you think this settles out?
Well, I think that we've seen a clear desire to have this kind of technology for behavioral health. We've codified the reimbursement structure around behavioral health. Behavioral health use has remained high even after in-person visits. Or telehealth behavioral visits remained high even after in-person visits returned. So for behavioral health, telehealth is a game changer. I think where it settles out for other types of care is really yet to be decided. And in fact, because certain types of care have been entirely left out of this discussion about parity reimbursement, I'm thinking speech pathology, occupational therapy, physical therapy, those providers say our reimbursements are so low to begin with that we can't even accommodate any reductions in doing this for telehealth. So some providers, I think, are going to get left out.
All right. Jessica Bartlett is medical reporter for the Boston Globe. Dr. Christopher Garofalo is a family medicine physician in Attleboro, co-owns Family Medicine Associates of South Attleboro. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.